In 3, 2, 1, and you're on the air.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, Alex.
Long time no speak.
I know, it's been, what, a week?
Something like that, yeah. So, yeah, things are hotting up.
Yeah, lots of deaths and everything making the headlines.
Yeah. Well, we've decided to have a discussion about comedy, about the dark side of comedy. Before we started recording this, we were trying to decide where our conversation actually started. And we've settled on it could have been Robin Williams' death, but it probably came from before that.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit before that.
So I actually still don't know how he died. Someone said that they I'm not even going to go into it. I haven't followed the story. All that's interesting for me is that here's a comedian who has killed himself. And that just takes us, or it's like the beginning of the journey where we started looking at comedy. Because I remember reading a quote by Edward de Bono saying that humor is the most significant thing that a human brain can do. Because you're going down one track and then you switch to a completely different track. That's the punchline. That's when you laugh. And how artificial intelligence or computers, they just can't grasp this switching of tracks. But humans, we get it in an instant. So I think because of that, and because when you laugh, it makes you feel good, that I had presumed that comedy must be good for you.
I just want to expand a little bit. When you said the artificial intelligence, a good example, if somebody wants to see that, you know, and not that I want to push you down to watching Star Trek, but a good example is Star Trek The Next Generation, the artificial android Data. They make a big deal in the beginning about him first not understanding emotions, but then it gets even wider and bigger that he wants to learn about humor.
Right.
And then they push it in one of the big screen movies that he finally laughs. He has a real laugh.
And right.
It's like a big moment. I just want to expand on that if people, you know, want to look into the artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence will never understand what humor is.
Right. Right. We hope not. But, yeah, we've had this. Also, I think that humor is humor's also been pushed, I think, as a sort of a gentle kind of thing. It's not like comedy shows are normally half an hour long. They're smaller, they're less important than your big dramas or your action movies. You've just, like, comedians, I think, were lower down the scale. If you go to Hollywood, all the big names first and then the comedians are lower down. Comedy seems less amazing. People like a good laugh, but they're more likely to remember, you know, a big movie or
right.
whatever.
Right.
So that might be another way it's kind of slipped under the radar. But not anymore. So in the effort... So part of what led us down this track is that we had thought about bringing more humour into our lives, more to try and, you know, balance things out. And I suggested to Michael we watched Eddie Izzard, who is an English comedian who I remembered watching and liking very much. I thought his humour was incredibly intelligent. Sometimes it doesn't seem like that, but it is, and he's able to just, he will go back and tie things in again and again and again. Later on he'll bring back things he's mentioned earlier on.
I remember you mentioning, too, while we were watching him, how easily he slips into character, going back and forth, different characters.
Mm. And the other thing I liked about him was how well he could say things. I've been impressed by the way you can explain something through exaggeration, through a comedic exaggeration, far better than you ever could in a long sort of a long whole page of dialogue, or you could turn it into comedy and say it in a sentence or two, and you get it, and you get it even better than, you know, if someone had described it, you know, blow by blow. And he was just a master of that. Anyway, we're watching this, and I'd remembered there was a part in his stand-up, which is called Dress to Kill, about putting babies on spikes. And that just sounds so bad to talk about now.
Yeah.
You have to watch it. Well, you don't have to watch it, but you could watch it. And he ties it all in. And but it's very unsettling at the same time when you hear it.
Yeah.
But because he surrounds it all with humor, and you kind of let it slide by.
Right.
But only because we'd started just looking into comedians a bit and starting to wonder that, for me, this time it didn't slide by. It was like, hang on, this isn't right. I mean, I knew it wasn't right, but because I liked the guy and I liked most of his work, I let that bit slide by, which I think is exactly how all this works. Because you like a lot of something, you allow the rest of it.
Yeah. You make allowances, like you were saying.
You make allowances, that's right. That's right. You take any TV program. The first series is going to be great. And you take it, if you like it, you take it to your heart. And then when the next series comes on, which is undoubtedly always less than, you start to make allowances. And then each succeeding episode, it just gets darker and darker. And but you stay loyal to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same with these comedians. But we started considering the idea. I just can't even remember where, but we've been talking a lot about entities. We've been exploring and playing with the idea that what would you call them? Transdimensional, interdimensional.
I would say probably interdimensional. I did a lot of research in the past. This has also got stimulated again about Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And muses, and how actors just allow themselves to be taken over.
Right, right. So that's all part of it too. Yeah, all that work, work that you've talked about. Yep.
And you know, it's like, well, why wouldn't a comedian? Why wouldn't a comedian do the same thing?
Yeah. Well, this is what we started looking at. You know, are comedians? What's behind a comedian? Is the comedian the person who's the physical, you know, the body? Is there an entity who does the show? Is what we started to, one or a number of entities doing the show.
Yeah.
And we started to look into other, so we're watching Eddie Izzard and contemplating the fact that, is that Eddie Izzard or is that something else that we're watching? Now, in these, in the Dress to Kill and in a number of other stand-ups by Eddie Izzard, he's a transvestite. So he's dressed as a woman. He's got makeup on.
Right.
He's not gay. He simply dresses as a female.
Right.
Speaks as a male. But, you know, just playing with the idea that it's possible that it's entities that we're watching who are stand-up comedians rather than the comedian himself, or that they are taken over or an entity works with them. Very interesting to watch the facial characteristics, to watch in that show. I just got this weird sense of looking at someone who was laughing at the audience as opposed to with the audience.
Yeah.
And that was something else that we've discussed, actually, where... We have watched a number of comedians, and the comedian endears themselves to you by pretending to be one of you. The way they tell their jokes, the stories they tell, they talk as if it's all of us, as if they live the same life as we do. Now, these guys are filthy rich, you know?
Yeah.
They're super famous, filthy rich, which means that they have everything that comes with the fame. And not that I think that that's anything to be desired, but... they're not like us, but they sell themselves as being like us, and their stories are as if they're talking about all of us together. But it's been interesting to just take one step further back and the sense that, wow, are you laughing at us? Are you laughing at your audience?
Yeah.
You know, how often does the term monkey come up somewhere along the line, you know?
Right. And if you pay attention, once in a while they'll say, they'll turn it around and they'll be talking about them, but not in any relation to us.
Right.
And then they'll throw the punchline in, and it's like you said, it'll feel like, well, that was aimed at us. That was aimed at the audience.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're the monkey.
Yeah.
We're the simpletons.
Yeah.
And
It is when you start to pay attention, and I absolutely challenge people, if they want to, don't go and do it for the sake of it, you know, but if you're curious, to pick a few stand-up comedians and see what you can see. See if there's something to see. Prove us wrong. By all means, prove us wrong.
A lot of times, though, and we also notice is that they'll tell a lot of it. They'll put a lot of truth in there.
Mm.
A lot of truth that should be hitting you upside the head with like a brick. That isn't funny.
Right.
I mean, a well-known American comedian that did that a lot was George Carlin. And people would be laughing.
Can I come in for a second and say, just because for an awful lot of truth movement, New Age movement, George Carlin is up there as like sainted up there with...
That's okay. I'll knock him down.
Your how the world sees Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa and all those kind of very... wonderful people.
Oh, I know, because I've sat there and watched George Carlin and sit there and go, "This people shouldn't be laughing. This isn't funny. He's telling you guys the truth."
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I've noticed there's a lot of comedians that will do that. They'll go through their monologue. You get a lot of truth in there because you can just kind of pay attention. It's almost like a sound wave. You pay attention to the audience. They'll sit there and they'll work them right up. Remember I said 80 years old, got them all worked up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, on the downslope, he throws a whole bunch of truth in there and then brings them right back up.
Right.
So the truth, they were laughing at it.
Yeah.
Which basically, I think, that climax, he was opening them up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more acceptable.
Right. So that's something that we're considering here. And this is podcast, like every podcast, is an exploration.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stand behind anything I've already said or that I'm going to say for the rest of the podcast.
Mm.
It's an exploration. It's a wondering about what if. And the what if is, yeah, what if comedians are actually a lot, maybe all, who knows, the big ones are taken over to some degree or all degree by entities, and it's the entities who are doing the show. Sometimes you look at this. We've done some research and listening to some... people talk about particular comedians, and they talk about the genius of a comedian. Last night we watched, I've been doing some research, and last night put on a documentary about Ronnie Barker, who, very famous English comedian, who, when I started thinking about him, he's done a myriad of roles, so many different personalities.
Mm.
And they show some clips of him in an interview. And he's saying something along the lines of that he doesn't actually really have a personality. Wasn't that what he said?
Yeah, he's afraid he doesn't have one. So he has to put on one of the others.
Yeah, so he takes on or allows all these other different personalities. He just sort of lets them come through.
Mm.
And it's like, whoa, you know, this is pretty weird. Now, we know, like, how many comedians do you hear about... and they say how they're a completely different person when they're not on stage. You know, that seems to be almost a standard formula, that a comedian is not a funny person except when they're on stage. Now, I mean, who does that? That instantly makes me think of Hitler.
Right.
Hitler, who was this one person on stage, mesmerizing, off stage was just nothing, you know, just a, you know.
An empty vessel. You read how he would just be totally wiped out, like he wasn't even there.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, if people may have seen the clips out there, there's a clip of Bill Clinton getting ready to do an interview or do a bit on TV, and they're doing his makeup, and he's just sitting, they have the camera on him, and he's just sitting there staring like an empty vessel. Minute, you know, for like 4 or 5 minutes, not even blinking, breathing, couldn't even tell if the guy was alive.
Yeah.
He looked like he was in a trance. The minute they got him, you know, the camera comes on, lights come on, boom, somebody's there.
So the minute he's on show, he comes to light.
He comes to light.
See, this has got me wondering too about with the last podcast about is there something with the lights? You know, because when you're comedians or whatever are on stage, they are, the lights are on them, it's lights, camera, action, you know? I wonder whether that stimulates something, you know? Because it seems like these people, if you want to take your Hitler character, they go from being almost dead to, you know, over alive almost, you know?
Right.
Magnetic or electric or whatever.
So
looking at some comedians, you showed me some of the your clip of the Hollywood Unmasked.
Yes, it was the documentary Hollywood Unmasked and Hollywood Unmasked 2. The person who did the documentary, he did really good research. He did really good research. If people want to watch it, he's got his own religious views. You set that aside, though. He does the research, and you can go to the memoirs of the actors, the actresses, the interviews
mm-hmm.
that he quotes.
Right.
And you can find the stuff. Hollywood, more or less, started back like in the Valentino times, the 20s. Was it Valentino, the 20s?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're quoted in there in memoirs and interviews as opening themselves up to be a muse, which is basically what an actor is. I mean, if you look up actor, you know, like ancient Greek times, they talked about, you know, the best actor would be the one that opened himself up, you know, the best muse,
right?
Know, would, you know, the best vessel,
right?
Valentino and his wife, they wrote a lot of movies, and I guess they were very heavy into the occult.
Right.
No, I'm not sure if people are aware of Hollywood's roots, but it's if we're going to talk about comedians, we got to drag Hollywood in here too, because the big comedians are pushed through Hollywood. You've got to go through Hollywood.
Really, Hollywood sort of, I think, almost birthed itself on comedy with people like Charlie Chaplin as well.
Charlie Chaplin, yeah, yeah.
Who was, you know, before there was even sound, he was huge. You know, he was opening people up, endearing himself to them, making, I guess, the movie so acceptable. You go along, you laugh, you feel good, you know. It takes your mind off your worries. You know, Hollywood came, you know, was coming around that time of the Depression. So there's, you know, it always seems to pop in when there's a lot of suffering. And that's one person I haven't looked into, Charlie Chaplin. I mean, we could take this. I could do research, I'm sure, for weeks or months and come up with an amazing article, but I've got a lot of things on at the moment, but even if I might do it, or other people might do it, but I'm sure you're going to find with each of them some very weird stuff.
Mm.
That Hollywood Unmasked, like Michael said, the guy is very into religion, so, you know, that's his reason, that's why he made all this, he did the research so he could sell God, and that's fine. So you can leave the God selling behind and just
right.
look at
the
information
yeah.
enough to go, wow, that's rather interesting and very scary.
Mm.
I mean, I've looked into Hollywood from, done research on the first, like the, some of the three biggest movies when they started doing the sound, the talkies, were three horrors, you know, and one after the other, each year in quick succession, there was Dracula, Frankenstein, and I think it was King Kong. You know, really, those are bizarre. If you're starting something, imagine you're starting your own business or something. You wouldn't bring in the heavy shit like that. You'd want to try and ease your customers in gently before you hit them over the head. Well, maybe that was what Charlie Chaplin did, to open them up.
Right.
So we're looking at the possibility that with comedy, they get you to open up so that you... I would suggest in that sense, if we were looking at entities coming in through comedians, we'd be looking at very high-level entities, because humor is the highest form of, you know, of what the brain can do. Okay, it's probably much easier to write a drama or to get people crying than it is to get them laughing, to get them
right.
the belly laughing and things like that. Another thing that interested me about Eddie Izzard, just going back to him, was that... he's done some later stand-ups, and he's no longer dressed as a transvestite. He's in men's clothes, he's got a beard on, and I can't relate to him at all. It's interesting, but since doing this research, I got to wondering, wow, does that mean that the entity, if there was an entity,
right?
If there was one, that the entity that was in him, in the stand-ups that I watched, is no longer present,
right?
And that that entity was a female type entity, and that's where the transvesticism is coming from.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. Just play here, just weird play.
Yeah.
But I mean, they do weird things to us, so I think it's only fair that we're allowed to wonder weirdly as well.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember we played with the idea that possibly, you know, this it's one entity for a certain time, and then it's like, well, okay, my turn for the ride, and then the next entity gets the chance, and that's why they seem so different.
When
they
right.
do different road tours, or they bring out a different character, or whatnot.
Right.
If people want to take a look into Hollywood's past, they really want to take a look at, you know, where Valentino and his wife started, and there was also a lot of famous actresses and actors.
Yeah, it's really scary how many of them, through those videos, are saying that they were into some sort of a cult or into tarot, not tarot, or could be tarot, but also like seances and...
Yeah, it was a lot of seances. There was another famous actress where she would... she was quoted, and she, you know, as saying, "Spirits, you know, come help me. You know, I need to write a script." I wish I could remember.
Oh, was that May? Was that May? No,
it was May West.
No, it was someone else. Right.
And they would just, you know, she would call in the person to take dictation.
Yeah.
While she laid there in a trance.
Right.
The next thing you know, they had a script.
Yeah, and if this guy is correct, then a lot of that early Hollywood, and if it's, come on, if it was happening then, it's surely still going to be happening now.
Right.
I mean, how do you prove an entity? Well, you don't. But there's so much weird stuff in this world, so much.
Well, and just the way they talk. Do you remember in the interview, like Oprah saying in People magazine, I just felt like I, you know, something
oh,
came
right.
over me. They don't deny it.
That's right. She said she talks with all sorts of different
spirits on her
spirits.
Indiana
yeah.
farm or something.
That's right.
Like that
That's
she
right.
She's jogging.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't deny it. They'll
no,
sit there
they
and
don't.
Say, you know, yeah, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is 30 different people.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's yeah. right. It's very useful sometimes. Well, like I found it useful to watch that to go. It's because. How it works for me is that you've got, it's almost like each actor is in a little compartment. Jesus, this sounds creepy, but it's like they're in a little compartment within you. And until you pull them out kicking and screaming and have a look at them, they stay safely tucked in there. You don't think to, oh, let me look at this person, because you liked them. You liked they were a character in something and you liked them. And it's like you have a huge house and you gave them a little room to stay in.
Like a little action figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that you need to actually pull them out and have a look, and because the character they played is not them in any way. It's not real. It's a lie. You've never had a relationship with that character, but you know that's the TV allows you to think that you have. It's done so well that you feel like you're having a relationship with this character or this character. They're a little part of your life, you know. And there's so many of them in there. We've got so many of these bastards inside our homes as a little part of our lives, and they don't belong there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like that's just the way Hollywood works.
Mm.
If you're going to go to Hollywood, you're not going to get this big break that everybody tries to sell the fake story
no.
in the movies. Oh, I'm going to Hollywood and get my big break. I'm going to work as a waitress and blah, 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 blah. Well, no, that's not how it's going to happen.
You know, I wonder how much what they're after, all those, the ones who want their big break, how much is it they want the fame? How much of it is like they actually want what's in the movies as well? They want those lives that it looks like the actors have, because the actors, it's not real. It looks like they're living those lives, like in, like, you know, Eureka, say, for instance, is a TV program. They're in some crazy place with all this amazing... It's not real.
Right.
But I wonder how much of actors actually think they're going to live somehow that life, as if it's sort of real.
Right.
I don't think actors really, on the whole, can be very smart people. I don't.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're just a muse. According to the research, they're just a vessel. But getting back to, and we're not bad mouthing or any disrespect to Robin Williams' death. But I think that I know you didn't know it. I didn't really dig up anything. I just caught a couple headlines. It was death by asphyxiation.
Right.
So,
yeah. Someone
supposedly,
said that.
Supposedly, he also had. I think it was like a Yahoo headline. And supposedly he had some disease also.
Right.
I'm not sure what it was. But Robin Williams was a big, huge part of the 80s. He was pushed big time.
Yeah.
And he was a busy guy. Because I remember when I was a kid, then maybe I was a teenager, they did... Band-Aid was something else. Comic Relief or something like that.
Right.
It was him, Billy Crystal, and Whoopi Goldberg going around the world trying to raise money by doing stand-up.
Right.
Well,
they brought him in through Mork and Mindy, didn't they?
I think so. I remember seeing him. Yeah, he showed up on a cameo. Yeah, it was Mork and Mindy. He also did a cameo as Mork on Happy Days with Henry Winkler.
Oh.
Yeah. So that, I think that's where it might have been Robin's.
Oh, and let's bring up the comedies as well. You know, that's these ones that are just so tucked away. Happy Days, for instance. It would be really good to go back and pull out all these comedies and start to wonder about them and wonder about the relationship that's happening behind and wonder how many of the actors may have been channeled, how much of the script perhaps is channeled.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Channeled or that there are entities happening. It's because you think humor is like it just gets under the radar. Oh, it's humor, it's funny, it's cute, it's nice, makes you feel good, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Which is why we want to bring it up. So, okay. Okay, so you got the Robin Williams thing, and I mean, that's a weird guy. That was a weird guy, wasn't it? Just a weird guy, and that's a weird way to end your life. Again, I don't know the details, I don't need to know them.
Right.
But if it's asphyxiation, that's really weird. Supposedly he was very depressed, I've heard that as well. And you hear this about a lot of comedians. So that's just not healthy. You know, you think someone who is sincerely and congruously happy in themselves, you would think, well, you would like to think they're a funny person because they have this humor inside them and it just spills over into life.
Right.
But it does not seem to be that way with comedians. It's like miserable or morose in life or depressed and then funny on stage. You either got a split personality or is it possible that there's an entity jumps in on board when the lights are on them? You know, lights, right. Camera, action.
Right, yeah. I think it was also back through the, was it Mae West? When we were checking out, when I was checking out Hollywood en masse too, Mae West, Marilyn Monroe was included in that documentary. I know they're not comedians, but it was a lot of
Oh, they did some. Well, no, stars. Mae West did comedian roles, and Marilyn Monroe did some.
She did the, Oh,
God. Some Like It Hot.
Yes. So that was supposedly, that was a big movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
And James Dean wasn't a funny guy.
Yeah, James Dean is another, just sort of, so jumping out of comedy for a minute, people that you wouldn't, who had these weird backgrounds, these are into all sorts of dark stuff. You know, these people just kind of slide under our radar. Oh, they were great actors or great actresses or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But have a look a little further, and they were into some dark shit.
Yeah, he was quoted as saying, "Yeah, I know quite a bit about occult things and Satanism." He was he quoted that in an interview.
Hmm.
But the comedians, it's they just, to me, the laughter, like you said, when they get you to open up and accept the what should be unacceptable.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. They get us, and I think they get us to laugh at ourselves, but the laughing at ourselves is not actually a happy laughing. It's almost like laughing at our lot.
Yeah.
Our lot in life, like this is how it is. We all know it's bad. We're all stuck in this together, although they are not in it with us because they live a much different life to us.
Yeah.
One thing with Rudolph Valentino in that Hollywood Unmasked, he had these really weird eyes. And it just occurred to me today that after watching the Ronnie Barker documentary last night, I was thinking, whoa, there's a look in Ronnie Barker's eyes that was in Rudolph Valentino's eyes.
Right.
It doesn't look healthy or natural. There's a real kind of a glare or a, I don't know, just a weird look.
Yeah.
So, I'll go on.
I was just going to say, it looked like a harsh stare or something.
Yeah,
something like,
just
looking
kind of a creepy,
through you, yeah.
Yeah, a creepy kind of stare. So, Now, we've had some discussions with the whole talk about the comedians. I was reminded of an article by Matt Deleuze.
Yes.
On a thing called the Comedy Carpet in Blackpool. Now, just before I go any further, I want to bring in something else that I just think needs to be almost like foundational to anything that we do. And it's something I call 2% doubt. 2% doubt is where you never trust fully anything. You're allowed to question and I don't want to use the word should, and it would be wise.
Wise, yes.
To always leave 2% doubt to anything or anybody for nothing else. It allows room for more information to come in your mind. If you're 100% sure, there is no more room in your mind for any new information to come in. So I find the work and have found the work of Matt Deleuze intriguing and thought-provoking. However, I also have 2% doubt about him. And sometimes people don't like it if I say things like that. I just think it's healthier to have that. Just as anyone who's listening here should have 2% doubt about me or Michael or right. or this podcast or whatever. It's just a healthy thing. So that said, he wrote this very interesting article on a thing called the Comedy Carpet, which was laid down in Blackpool in England. It's a very, very long article that he wrote. It's more like a small book, really. It's made up of... It must have cost like just millions of dollars to lay it down. I'll put a picture and a link on the little write-up I do. But it's made up of the names and sayings of just loads and loads of very famous comedians from England. I mean, a ridiculous number of them. And it's all their words. And they said they use a special type of granite. And you want to look into, you know, look into rocks and minerals. You know, the granite, what we saw in Boston, you know, the banks are built with granite.
Yeah.
So this carpet is built with granite and apparently a special type of concrete. Which they don't go into, and you know, I've got to be wondering what do they put in this concrete. It's laid out to look sort of a bit like a newspaper kind of thing in the shape of a cross, which Matt points out very well. You can look at it as a two-dimensional church. In the very center of this comedy carpet are five comedians, four of whom died of heart attacks, and the fifth one was the comedian they used to open ceremoniously or ritually open
right.
the comedy carpet. I'll leave a link to, I'll give you the name of Matt's article if you want to read it. He does a very interesting job, but it really got me, that mixed with Eddie Izzard, I'm wondering about what the fuck is going on with comedians. Why would you do that? Is there some very strong power happening when a comedian is on stage? At the heart of the comedy carpet, the most central figure is Morecambe, Eric Morecambe from the comedy duo Morecambe and Wise, who was huge in it was Morecambe, wasn't it? I'm sure it was Eric Morecambe in the center.
Is it the Sunshine?
Yeah. That's right, thank you.
Yeah.
He's at the very center of this church that is the comedy carpet. He died of a heart attack. I'm pretty sure it was while he was on stage or pretty close to having done a show. Not that old. And how Matt describes it is that these comedians, in a sense, gave their heart for their work. So they kind of almost like they gave their heart. We're looking on a ritualistic level. How I like to, when I talk to Michael, we describe it as an ayahuasca level, which is a description to say that, say you took the drug ayahuasca, you see things differently, you know. So on this, on a five sense level, you might see a glass of water, you know. But on the ayahuasca level, if you'd taken that drug, it would be transformed into something completely different. And, you know, wondering whether, with on when people take the ayahuasca, they're simply visiting this some sort of interdimensional level, you know. They're seeing and experiencing beyond the five sense what we can't see. So Matt describes the comedy carpet on a five sense level as it just looks like this flat design on the ground. But beyond that, you'd be looking at something that's the equivalent of a church.
Or a temple.
Yeah, absolutely. Temple, church.
Yeah.
So now I forgot what I was actually talking about.
The heart, you had mentioned to me that you thought maybe that they sacrificed their heart like in an Aztec ritual.
Right, that is what Matt said. So Matt said it was like, you're looking here at these people have given up their hearts. That this was like almost like an Aztec ritual. In the Aztec rituals, your heart would be cut out. So looking at these comedians is almost taking part in almost like a blood sacrifice or a heart sacrifice level of their giving their hearts for their comedy. And I guess in a sense, I don't know whether we're meant to owe them. I don't want to start making things up here. It was interesting enough to look at what we can see. So with Morecambe, who was part of Morecambe and Wise, their catchphrase, their song that they would sing at the end of every show was called Bring Me Sunshine. And Matt likes to link in with solar worship, solar cults. And so taking that comedy carpet again, looking at it as a sort of an Aztec sacrificial ritual with these words, Bring Me Sunshine, which can be translated to Let There Be Light, or, you know, there's so much sneaky stuff, you know, and we're allowed to play with it because so much sneaky stuff is put on us. We're allowed to turn the tables and go back. We're allowed to play. We're allowed to play silly, almost silly games and go, well, what the fuck is this? Is this is something happening here or not? You try and have a conversation, you know, with your family or friends or something about something like this, and they're just going to laugh you off the face of the earth.
Right.
And that leaves us unsatisfied and empty because we feel that something isn't right. And we don't want to go down that matrix level, you know, that matrix of something's not right. But we do feel like this is really weird. This is weird.
Yeah, and it's and while we're playing, I mean, we also want to take a look at other areas, not the obvious ones that are thrown in our face, like the gay agenda, the lesbian agenda, or whatever that Hollywood's dishes out. It's right in your face. The comedians, you would have never thought, oh my goodness, you know, your question, nobody would ever question it. Oh, these guys are up on stage, they're just, you know, or they're depressed because all people who spend all their time giving out laughter.
That's right, it's part
later.
Of their genius, it's part of their
it's
genius,
part,
you know?
Their genius.
It's normal.
And you listen to them on their interviews, they just love to pat each other on the back. Oh, he's such a genius at his work.
Right.
You know, blah, you know, they just carry on. It's like they're part, oh goodness, dare I say it, the brotherhood or something, or sisterhood or whatnot. But
right.
That's what Hollywood is. It's a giant cult. I mean, we've heard it enough. I know in the last podcast I mentioned, and we saw more of it in Hollywood on Mass too, was that the guy that he has said the head of the Church of Satan said, no, we don't allow our children to watch TV. And you remember how he said, well, when they get to be of age, this is like Anton LaVey or something like that, whoever the head of the Church of Satan is, said, no, we don't let our children watch TV, but when they're old enough, we will give them the choice, but they'll be warned first.
Right, yeah.
What it does to you. It's just, you dig it up, and you dig it up. You turn over another rock, and just for example, not to go too far off the comedic path here, because, you know, the comedy...
Don't worry, we'll come back.
We'll come back to the 3D temple. I stumbled under, while I was doing the Hollywood research, I stumbled upon magicians. Magicians, kind of an easier one to see, because all you got to really do is go look at the occult stuff, like Blavatsky, Bailey, Crowley, just go back there. I wish I could remember the name of the 33rd degree Mason that says yes, all black magic or all magic comes from black magic and occultism. And then you look at these new magicians. I mean, you can go look at Dynamo. It's just an example. I don't care if he gets pissed off at me and things, but Dynamo has this story where he's sick, he's dying in the hospital. He makes a decision that I'm going to be somebody great. Disappears for like 2 or 3 weeks. Nobody knows where he is. in the woods somewhere, supposedly one person said, comes back, he's fine, he's not sick and dying anymore, but all of a sudden he can do this magic that nobody's ever seen, you know? And you just watch some of his tricks, and it's just like, there's no way that, you know, cause they do a lot of unplanned stuff. There's street magicians out there that if you watch some of their work, it's like, there is no way there's an entity helping this person.
Right.
Even David Copperfield, I went and researched, and I went and looked back on some of David Copperfield's stuff, and he tells you, we watched a clip, remember?
Mm-hmm.
He said he was in a straitjacket, and he used comedy,
yes.
He had people laughing. First he introduced the Madonna joke, and then he said, and remember, it's not me, it's the spirits.
Mm-hmm.
He tells people, flat out. So it's like the comedians, when they come at us with the truth, they're telling you, they're throwing it right in our face. I mean, just like Copperfield did. I mean, he told the truth. I'm just sitting there going, oh my God. But he's laughing. Didn't you just hear what he said? He's not the one doing the trick. It's the spirits.
Right.
So black magic pulls in spirits to control. Cirque
du Soleil?
Cirque du Soleil was a big example. I saw some of their stuff. And it's like, whoa, that's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Unless you have the help of an entity. You go do the research. You go look at the occultism and read about the black magic. Sure enough, a magician conjures up a spirit to assist in the tricks. What's you know, there's no difference what Hollywood's doing. I mean, Hollywood, those actors and actresses told us, yes, I opened myself up to the spirits. Marilyn Monroe was quoted as saying that as well, but she also, when she got towards that tragic ending of her life, also said, I wish I could just be me. She said, I'm so tired.
Wow.
Yeah. She was just so tired of it. She just wanted to be herself. So there is no sacred place. What I'm seeing, there's no sacred. Comedy's not sacred. Big screen's not sacred.
Well, maybe it is. And sacred is the dodgy word. You know, sacred is a
very dodgy word.
Now, as you were talking, I just got it. It just hit me so strong. Comedians are magicians.
Yeah.
They are magicians. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at magic here. We're just looking at magic in a different way. They create the aura, but they do it through their words. So instead of transforming a top hat into a pigeon, they transform one story into something else, and you're laughing. Comedy is possibly maybe the highest form of magic. It
right.
just hit me as you were talking. It's like, oh my God, wow.
Right, yeah. Because they're magicians with the verbal. Because they get into our heads. We're doing the visual while they're doing it.
Yeah, and because we open ourselves up. As soon as we laugh, we're opening ourselves up and we're letting more of their stuff in. You probably can't get a better agreement with someone than to laugh, because
right.
you have now no form of defense, because you've just allowed. You've gone with it. You're riding that energy that they are. They're creating it.
Right.
You ride it.
Right. And there was also some dodgy stuff when we took a look at Dylan Moran. Remember he had these weird pictures? One of his... He had a really mean show. It was just... He just felt... Ugh.
Yeah, so Dylan Moran is from Black Books. And, you know... It was very funny.
Oh, it was hilarious. I will give him his props. I loved the show.
I did.
That was one of the few shows that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, very funny, and you sort of open. You open. Sorry. Let's be honest here.
We do.
It's like you open yourself up to them. You like this guy. You like his humor, even though he's actually really mean.
Yeah, he's really.
He's
mean.
You know. How do you make a mean person likable? That's magic.
Yep.
That's magic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we did watch. And you watch these comedians. And I've watched a number of his because I liked him.
Yeah.
And I watched him seeming to get more bitter and more... and they also seem to be a lot obsessed with death. They bring in death. These comedians bring in death a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is my, you know, are you trying to make death accept? Are you trying to bring it in and get us laughing about it? I don't know. That's just an interesting thing that I've noticed.
Death and getting older.
Yes, getting old. It's like they want you to, it's like, okay, these are things that are inevitable,
yeah,
and you're going to laugh about them. Is it because you're going to accept them? You're going to accept, illness and not having much money and death and lack of love and all these things in your life. Hey, let's laugh at them.
Was it him or Billy Connolly that did the whole colonoscopy thing, went off on the whole...
That was Billy Connolly.
Billy Connolly, oh, jeez. And they make it funny. They make it acceptable. Oh, go for your colonoscopy.
They keep bringing in this stuff like, this is what you should be doing. They're like fucking salesmen.
Yeah.
But they make you laugh.
Yeah.
And they make it seem like, they've done this, so if they've done it, you should be doing it too, you know? Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how much are they selling and who are they selling for?
Yeah.
You know, who are they salesmen for? So I really think it's worth people just paying attention and having that 2% doubt. You know, it doesn't mean you can't laugh or... I mean, do whatever you want. I don't really care, but... It might be a good idea to have 2% doubt when watching comedians. You know, do a bit of exploration. Pick one that you're not so enamored with so that you can actually be more open and see what you can see. This is interesting stuff. So I want to just go down some darker lines here because... So that it doesn't sound like we're just talking crap. I don't... anyone who's seen Father Ted. Father Ted was an Irish... three series. It's a piss take of the Catholic Church. It's set on a craggy island, a small island on the coast of Ireland somewhere. And you have these three priests living in a house. You've got Father Ted, who's the guy you sort of identify with. Father Dougal, who's the you know, lovable idiot, and Father Jack, who's the disgusting pervert, and he's always drunk.
Drunk, yeah.
And then you have the Mrs. Doyle, who's the housekeeper, who is the that very important, horrible, sort of disgusting, revolting female character that appears in way too many shows, which is another whole thing I'm going to do a podcast or an article about sometime. But the crux of this is the three priests, but in particular, Father Ted is the main character. He was played by an actor called Dermot Morgan, and he died pretty much directly after they filmed the last episode of Father Ted of a heart attack. He was 45 years old. So they've just finished the last series and the last episode of Father Ted, and he's gone. He's dead. 45 years old, heart attack. There is a memorial chair to him, a wooden one with a big, it's an outdoor one, don't know where it is, and it's got the all-seeing eye at the base of the chair. It's curious. Mm-hmm. It's very curious.
Right.
Now, last night I was thinking about, because we watched some of a documentary about Ronnie Barker. Ronnie Barker, who played so many different characters, but his most probably well-known one was an English comedy series called Porridge. He plays a criminal locked up in prison. So doing porridge means doing time, means being in prison. And for most of the series, he has a cellmate, his cellmate's Lenny Godber, G-O-D-B-E-R. It's interesting the names that they choose. And it's funny too that Lenny or Leonard, how often I come across that name. It's very interesting. Leo King, solar worship, solar symbol.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lenny is this adorable, good-looking, nicely charming guy that everybody just liked. I remember growing up watching it, you know. Just such a nice, friendly, a little bit thick, but completely likable guy. And he died of a heart attack, aged 31 years old. And I did a bit of research on him just on Wikipedia last night. And there's just some really weird shit came up. Really weird synchronicity. Actually, it's almost too hard to go into, but it's just weird shit. Maybe I'll write about it or something. I don't know. But he had been at a party to farewell the two Ronnies. So Ronnie Barker, who I was talking about previously.
Right.
They were going off to Australia. So, and he's in this show with Ronnie Barker, the guy who has the eyes that looks like Valentino, the guy who has no personality of his own but can so easily adopt lots of other different, take on any other sort of personality. I don't know. I can play with ideas, like you can play with the idea of sacrifice, whatever. There just seems to be this really weird shit that happens with comedians. Now, in this case also, Lenny Godber is interesting because he was played by the actor Richard Beckinsale. And also on the Ronnie Barker had said about him that there was a kind of a universal grief when he died. He was saying even though he hadn't actually done very much, there was this universal grief. People really felt it because it was the wrong... It's one of those things I still remember. It just was wrong. Everything was wrong. He was too young. He was too nice. Everyone liked him too much. It was too wrong that he died.
Right.
He was played by the actor Richard Beckinsale. Richard Beckinsale was Kate Beckinsale's father. Kate Beckinsale went on... most people will know her because she is the Underworld woman.
Yes.
I can't remember what her name is, but she's been in both. She also played along... I'm pretty sure she was in with Hugh Jackman in that... The vampire one.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Van Helsing.
Van Helsing, yeah. Whether that was her, yeah.
Wish my mind wasn't full of useless crap like that.
Yeah. So she's gone on to take on these really dark roles. I don't know how it works, but I do have to wonder, we've talked about this, is that as one, if we work in this world of duality, one goes down, as someone goes down, someone else rises up. You know, played with the idea with Robin Williams, the name William as his surname, whether, you know, we should expect that Prince William at some point soon is going to be taking a little bit of a rise into, further up the royal ladder or what? I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
It could be a William. It could be a Williams. It could be a Robin.
Yeah.
It could be something.
But there does seem to be this one up, one down kind of thing. One goes down and someone else goes up. We saw that, I think I saw that quite clearly with River Phoenix and Leonardo DiCaprio. River went down and Leonardo DiCaprio went up.
Yep.
You know, he went on to do two of the films that River Phoenix was booked to do.
And both of them. And not to get off track, but both of them were quoted in Hollywood Unmasked 2 as River Phoenix talking about, you know, how he was familiar with the cult and
opened himself up. Yeah, he came from a dodgy background,
And he would open himself up. And so did Leonardo.
Maybe there's like when there's two actors who are similar, maybe the one who's willing to go darker is the one that gets to go and the other one because of the two comes, between those two.
Yep.
Then I would have to say River Phoenix, I think, was probably a lot lighter in spirit then.
Yeah.
But still, we can't be making excuses for any of them. They're in this stuff, whether they meant to or not. Mm-hmm. They're in dark, dark shit. Hollywood is just dark shit.
Yeah, and we're not just picking on Hollywood either. If you want to research the music industry, it's just as dark.
Entertainment industry or, Jesus, everything. But we're on that kind of...
Yeah.
Could do a different show on all sorts of other things.
And I think the synchronicity you were talking about the other night was the 31-year-old that died. Was his location where he died? And then when you started
I know. It was because, I've been having this discussion about... It was just so weird.
You wanted to look up Agatha Christie.
I was looking up Agatha Christie.
And it was the same location.
About Agatha Christie, and I was curious about whether... What entities perhaps were inside her and were... Because, fuck it, let's just keep going. We can come back to comedy as well.
Mm.
Agatha Christie is the second biggest bookseller in history, behind the Bible. Is it interesting, too, that Agatha Christie, we got Christ in the Bible and we have Christie as the second biggest seller of all time.
Right.
There is a video I haven't watched yet, but I need to rewatch. But something about how she had this dream about a man with a gun or something from when she was a kid. Some weird shit. But to fit back to our story, I was telling Michael about how Agatha Christie disappeared in 1926 for 11 days. Her car was found by the side of the road abandoned, and there was a massive manhunt on trying to find out... what had happened to her. She reappeared, or someone spotted her, 11 days later in a spa in the north of England. It's very bizarre. It's never been explained. I got some serious questions on that whole thing.
You're right, me too.
Yeah, but I decided to have a look because I remembered 1926 is always a good year to pay attention to. Okay, that was the year that Queen Elizabeth was born. So weird shit happened in 1926.
Right.
So I had thought, okay, I'll just have a quick look as to her disappearance. I knew it was in 1926. I just remembered it was in 1926. And it said that her car was found, and she had been living in this place called Sunningdale. And then when I went up an hour or two later to look up Richard Beckinsale, just curious about his death, I find that he died in Sunningdale. I mean, this is England. In one spot, we have Agatha Christie lived and disappeared from Sunningdale, Berkshire in England, and Richard Beckinsale died in Sunningdale, Berkshire. I mean, it was just really fucking weird. Then on top of that, I decided to look up Rudolph Valentino, same day, just all in the space of a few hours. And I was just curious about his death, again, because tying him into his eyes look like Ronnie Barker.
Right.
And I find that he died. I was having this curious idea. What if Valentino and Richard Beckinsale, one was a reincarnation of the other? Just right. I do weird things. So I looked up Rudolph Valentino, and I find he died aged 31.
On the date you looked him up.
Yeah.
The anniversary of the date
on the 23rd of August.
Yeah.
And that just happened to be yesterday when I was looking it up. I thought, what the fuck? It was just, sometimes you get these, like, one thing follows another. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It seems to me that when you play, if you play and you keep your 2% doubt, you can find information that you would never find any other way. You have to do it lightly, and suddenly it's all right there. All this weird shit is right there. I don't know how to put it all together. I can't explain it. I've got to keep 2% out, so I'm never going to come up with the answer anyway.
Right.
But it's so weird. There's this, like, just, it's zinging around off the, bouncing off the walls, and that whole synchronicity. It's just so fucking weird.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very strange.
So we can jump into, so I was like, okay, what if comedians channel entities? Entities come in and we're not actually watching genius comedy.
Yeah.
We're watching clever entities.
Clever entities. And it's not, I'm not going to say it's not, but it doesn't appear to be. Because people are going to talk about depression and split personality and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a Harvard-educated psychiatrist or doctor went out on a limb and said, what if schizophrenia is really about demonic possession?
Right.
He was a Harvard-educated doctor, and he said this. I wish I knew his name, but I know I read it and I saw it. But when you think about that, and how Robin Williams or any other comedian can flip.
That's right. Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I have no problem playing and exploring with this as a possibility. I read you out some of the bits from that book. There's a book by a psychiatrist, and I'm not recommending that you read it because my feeling is that also she is probably channeling something, or, you know? That's how it gets. You think you've got one layer, but underneath that is another one. But this American hypnotherapist and psychotherapist who seemed to happen on the fact that so many of her clients actually had entities inside them. It was interesting, though, the way she explained it is that while some were demonic entities, others were actually entities of the souls of people who had died, but being pulled inside the body of the person she's dealing with. And so this person might have physical symptoms, illness, that actually wasn't theirs, but belonged to the person or persons inside them. It's interesting and scary, I know, to contemplate.
Right.
And it's not like, oh, want to go out and don't want to freak anybody out at all.
No.
But if things work that way, I think it would be better that we knew it worked that way.
Right.
Not so that we feel depressed.
Or afraid.
Afraid. But because I actually think that there is, I don't want to say a solution, that there is a simple way to protect ourselves. And that is, you just got to pray to God. No, I'm joking. I'm sorry. I'm joking. Don't, for God's sake, don't do that. No, don't even say that. It's about keeping ourselves healthy, both on every level. How I feel is like keeping ourselves smooth and shiny on the inside so that these things can't cling to us. It's a little bit like brushing your teeth, you know, in the morning before you go to bed so that, you know, even if you do drink some sweet, sticky drinks, it's not going to have a long-term effect on you because you're washing away that crap on a daily basis.
Right.
In that sense, I think that the way that we keep ourselves smooth and shiny, you have to find your own personal or create your own personal prescription. It's not like this one way. One thing I would advise against, though, is apparently humor is the best medicine, but I'm going to advise against watching stand-up comedians. It's just a hunch, but I have a feeling it might not be good for your health. Sorry, being a bit cynical there. We can find a lot of it about, I think, is about letting go. It's about moving on, and it's about creating a future. Sometimes it's very, very hard to like visualize what you want, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be working at that. You know, what excites you? What turns you on? Robert Fritz would say your highest aspirations and your deepest values. And working every day to attune with those, to just pay attention to them. What really matters to you? Giving that attention as opposed to being drawn into all this shit. You know, we've looked, every fucking angle that you look at, as far as anything on a flat screen is dodgy. Anything that comes through earphones is dodgy.
Yeah, yeah. The music industry was, we could do that maybe another time, podcast. It was just so huge. But it runs similarly to Hollywood. When one artist comes up, it's usually due to a blood sacrifice. Either a friend or a relative mysteriously dies.
Right.
And you can just follow the trails. It's incredible. You know?
There seems to be this this sacrificial thing. I was saying to you the other day, I thought maybe we shouldn't even use the word sacrifice because it has so much attached to it.
Right.
Maybe we need almost like a mathematical equation, sort of one up, one down. You want to go up in this world, in a particular field that is to do with entertainment, and you're willing to open yourself up to something, then it's seems quite likely that something or someone else will go down. You know, I have wondered about, and not just music and not just entertainment, any sort of fame, any sort of being extra special. One person who interests me is Edmund Hillary, Sir Edmund Hillary. Did he want fame? He wanted to climb, you know, Mount Everest, and he did it. I'm not sure how many years after that, but his wife and his daughter were killed in a plane crash.
Right.
You know, that seems to me the kind of thing that you're talking about, where you get something, you become famous, and right. you have to pay the price. You have to pay the piper.
Didn't you say Keanu Reeves had a girlfriend that was pregnant that died?
That's right, Keanu. That's well. From the gossip that I heard, yes, he had a girlfriend. I'd have to go and double look, but I'm pretty sure I read it somewhere that he'd had some girlfriend, she was pregnant, and and she died. She died, the baby died. You know, with Edmund Hillary, it goes even more because years later, after that, he was meant to fly on the Antarctic sightseeing trip that flew from... New Zealand to Antarctica. It was a non-stop flight all the way to Antarctica, whiz around, have a look and come back again. That plane is New Zealand's worst ever disaster. Everybody, the day before it took off, the night before it took off, they changed the coordinates, the computer. And that had never been done before. The pilot didn't check the coordinates. It's never been done before. And so he ends up flying, he was flying 20 miles in a different direction than he thought he was. And he ended up flying straight into the side of the southernmost active volcano in the world, which was called Erebus. Erebus in Greek mythology means doorway to Hades, basically doorway to hell.
Right.
If that wasn't a sacrifice or a one up, one down, I don't know what is. But Edmund Hillary was supposed to be on that plane as the tour guide. Instead, he couldn't make it for some reason, and his best friend was on there.
Mm.
So his best friend went down. Wow. Some years after that, Edmund Hillary and his best friend's wife got married. It's a very weird, strange, you know, you think when you sell yourself out for fame, it almost seems like, is that the rest of your life taken over and gone? You're just going to follow according to, you're going to lose people that you love.
Yep.
What the fuck's going on here? Yep. Again, this is an exploration.
Yep. Yep.
But if it worked that way, you know, this fame is to be avoided at all costs.
Mm.
You know, it's detrimental to you, it's detrimental to your family or anyone you care about.
Yeah.
And what's going on?
Better off just being a nobody.
Yeah. So, but why would it be that way? Why would fame require these deaths, you know? Why?
That's a good question.
Yeah. That's when I can allow, you know, that there's possibly entities or something, because this is too weird.
Yeah.
This is too weird.
And then, and the other two weird stuff that we continuously were running across was how many authors out there are channeled. Or allow themselves, and then you find out years later they talk about it. You don't know it when you're reading their book, unless you really dig into their past.
Right.
But then a lot of authors will say something like, the character just suddenly, something came into me, and I had the character and
right.
the book written in a week.
Well, that's
what?
You see, that's a very good point, because that reminds me, go back to Agatha Christie. Now, apparently, she couldn't stand Hercule Poirot. She thought he was a jumped-up, snotty little prick. Something along those lines. That's obviously, don't quote me on that one. It's not quite correct.
Sounded good.
Along those lines. So she's writing this character that she can't stand. And it's like, he's alive. So who is she the writer, or is he the, you know, where, he seems alive. A lot of these people, these characters seem alive. So Arthur Conan Doyle, he tried to kill off Sherlock Holmes. He didn't want him. He didn't want, you know, Sherlock Holmes sounds like it was a monkey on his back, you know?
Right.
He killed him off, and he had to bring, the public said, you have to bring him back. You know, he had to bring him back again.
Unbelievable.
And I was telling you about, Agatha Christie was known as one of the four queens of crime, and she was up there with Dorothy L. Sayers, Marjorie Allingham, and Nio Marsh. Nio Marsh was a New Zealand writer. And I remember listening to an audiobook that talked about where her inspector came from. So she has this inspector called Roderick Alane. And basically she was sort of alone in her flat in London. And one rainy day she just decided to have a go at writing something. And she said it was almost like as if he just walked into her mind.
Yeah.
Now that's really, he's a nice character. She yeah. liked him. She didn't have a problem with him. But yeah. hello, that's a bit fucking freaky.
Right.
You know, if you were to say that someone, a character, you know, pretty much already made up, walks into your mind. And then you just start writing them. But isn't that channeling?
Yeah.
You know, really, isn't that channeling?
And that was a big part of what some of the actors and people who wrote the scripts, and back when I used to blog The Hidden Agendas, and we were picking apart movies and TV shows, when I was picking apart movies and TV shows, I always said, look, take a hard look. It's not the archetypes or the actors. Take a hard look at the writers. The directors know what they're doing. The actors are there. The casting directors are the ones that pick the archetypes. They're the ones that know, okay... just an example, Keanu Reeves can play this part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know he can. So we're going to cast him
in the
movie.
Cast a spell, yeah.
Right, but your writers are usually the ones that are in the know or part of a group.
Okay, so let me just jump in there and play with the English. Because we have writers, and then we can spell it R-I-T-E-R-S, right.
Yeah.
So the your casting directors
mm-hmm.
and your writers. These are spell words. These are magic words. These are magicians.
Mm-hmm. They are. Hollywood is, and I believe it was one of the alternative scholars, might have been Tessarian, that said Hollywood Which is used to create from a holly tree, their wands,
yeah.
Cast spells.
Right.
So holly wood.
Yeah. And, you know, you brought this up too. You know, why do we have so many channels on TV?
Channels?
You know? I mean, the words, the program, the channel. I mean, for fuck's sake, how stupid are we? Oh, yep, sign me up for another 50 years.
Give me another 100 channels.
Yeah, exactly. Hour. Oh, no, don't. Oh, don't even say that. Just joking. Fuck all entities. Fuck off. So I was playing with an idea the other day that you didn't like so much, but I thought was worth playing with, 2% out. Wondering about how this world works. Okay. Today's playful topic is entity invasion. And if what we were supposing about the comedians was true, then there's a fuckload of the bastards around. And so I was wondering if maybe that's simply how this world works.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering if perhaps basically entities just fucking are blowing in the wind. And whether they could be, whether they would be no different to Wi-Fi or
mm-hmm.
all the electromagnetic frequencies, that
yeah.
they're all over the place. And that they are blowing through us all the time. And if we're sticky, then they can grab a hold of us. You know, go back to last week's amazing podcast. We talk about the walls of the fish and chip shop, you know, because they're not cleaned and they just hold all the grease.
Right.
That if we're sticky inside ourselves, these entities can simply grab a hold and hitch a ride, maybe for an hour or two, maybe a day, a week, or whatever, you know.
Right.
Maybe, you know, what if this is just how this world works, even if we don't like it? You know, I mean, we have bacteria that come in our body on a daily basis, or stuff that sticks to our teeth, or
yeah.
whatever, and our body gets rid of them. You know, it comes in, and if your body's healthy, it gets rid of them. It's not a big deal. It's just how it is.
Right.
You know, what if this is such a... It's just how it is in this world. You might like it, but maybe it's just how it is. And we're given so much logic that we're told this is how it is scientifically, this is how it is.
Right.
But when we look at this, you know, when I looked at that stand-up of Eddie Izzard, and it probably could have been anyone else, okay? I'm not picking on her.
No.
Poor little entity carrier that he is.
Right.
No, just joking.
But Babies Unspoken should not have been funny
no,
at all.
No, it wasn't.
And he
was horrible.
He pulled it in a couple times.
He pulled it in
track.
A couple times.
Yeah,
you know, someone's
like,
saying babies taste like chicken,
oh.
you know. He's saying, well, humans taste like chicken, so babies must taste like chicken, you know? And getting you to laugh. You're sort of like, oh, creepy, but he's making funny faces, getting you to laugh.
Right.
And so you do the laugh, you know? But you're thinking, I don't like this.
Right.
You know, what if this world is just, it's just not at all how we think, and that it's entity-laden, or, you know, entity for, okay, we're using a... Here's a problem too, because we have these words and we think everyone knows what we mean.
Right.
My playful suggestion is, we've talked about this, more towards an interdimensional as opposed to an extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen an alien in my life. I'm not saying they're not there, but even if they're there, I still think they're interdimensional. It just makes more sense to me that there is the world beyond the five sense world as opposed to something out there.
Right.
And that we're influenced by it, that it's there, but we're not seeing it. But it's affecting us. That just makes more sense for me. Going along the Edmund de Bono idea of a proto-truth. That's my proto-truth at the moment. If a better idea comes next week, I'll kick that out and take on the new one. You know, I'm not loyal to anything. I'm just looking to get a reasonable enough view to work with. Anything that makes my life stronger, more powerful, that makes me a more powerful person, more my life effective, then I'm interested in that. And if thinking that, okay, it's possible that this is an entity-laden world, that the fuckers are all over the place, they're soulless, heartless, they will just hitch a ride on you. Okay, if that's how it works, that's how it works. That just gives me all the more incentive to make myself as healthy on every level as possible, to make myself as shiny and smooth. Because I want my life. I want, I want my life.
Yeah.
I don't want to be carrying all these fucking monkeys and horrible little gremlins or whatever.
Right.
Have them hitching a ride. But it's possible that that's how this world works.
Yeah.
And maybe fame is one of the things that opens people wide open to these entities.
Right.
You know, the actors, it might simply be that they do specific things that they talk about opening themselves up to things. They don't, do they?
Right. They do. The actors were quoted very much of just open yourself up and let, you know, the character take over. I mean, we saw James Dean quoted that. River Phoenix was quoted that. Johnny Depp, you know, is quoted saying that. And there's a lot of female actresses as well.
Right, right.
And I just had a thought when you were saying that about these kids, these kid actors, child actors from the 80s
mm-hmm.
that, you know, like Corey Haim and the other, Feldman or something like that.
There was two Coreys, yeah.
Yeah, one that killed himself and the other.
Right.
Yeah. That he said, he talked about how Hollywood is laden with pedophilia and all that stuff and how they always got drugs and alcohol were always just shelled right over to them.
Right.
My guess that, you know, to make it easier for the entities to have access.
Yeah, open you up and make you sticky.
The drugs
and
the alcohol.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Very dangerous. Not in, you know. It's just incredible how many actors. And then they'll just sit there and they don't deny it.
Right.
They don't deny it.
Well, now I'm just curious, as you're talking about that, how good is your brain full with useless knowledge? I was curious, how many comedians have killed themselves or died weirdly? Can you think? There was the Belushi guy.
Oh, James Belushi?
Yeah, he was one.
Yeah, or Jim Belushi.
A Belushi person. One of those Belushis.
Jim Belushi.
Okay. So there was a Belushi.
Yeah.
Peter Sellers, did he die youngish of a heart attack or something, or am I miss...
Peter Sellers. He was the one that...
Because he was quite big in the comedy carpet and everything, and they were pushing him in the English one. Didn't he suddenly just come out of nowhere as well?
Mm-hmm. He did a...
Didn't they say that in the Hollywood Unmasked?
Yeah,
prior to the Pink Panther ones, he was sort of nothing, and then suddenly something happened. There was something they mentioned. Anyway, so I'm just looking at deaths at the moment. Interesting comedy deaths.
Yeah, well,
Can you remember?
Those heart attacks at young ages, like father
right.
Peter, it's just whoa.
Yeah. Can you think of anyone else, like American ones? So you've got there's the Robin Williams one, and now.
Off the top of my head, no. But we could Google it.
Yeah, let's pause it and make it seem like we have this big long list.
All right, we have our list.
Yep, we're back after this message from our sponsors. Dun, 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 dun. Who are our sponsors?
Entity Free.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, Entity Free.
Stay Entity Free with this.
Yes, our Entity Free crisps. No entities with every bite. Right.
We were talking about comedians who died abruptly.
Yeah, so we've just been doing some research. John Candy died age 43 of a heart attack. Chris Farley, 33, of a drug overdose. John Belushi, 33, drug overdose. Phil Hartman was murder-suicide. Gilda Radner, who you said was what?
Gilda Radner. She was from
Radner.
Saturday Night Live.
Okay, 42, of a word we won't mention. Bernie Mac, who was 50. Andy Kaufman, people remember
Taxi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Only 35 years old.
Yeah, I think it was Latka or something.
Yeah, Latka, that's right. John Ritter, heart attack, age 54. And then just looking at Rick Mayall, who was English comedian. Anyone who knows, familiar with English comedy will know him from The Young Ones and a number of other comedies. 54, who died this year. And we're just looking up the, you know, all the people who come and talk about this famous actor. And there's just, you've just got this mass of famous comedians all kind of huddled together talking about how wonderful, you talked about that before, how wonderful this person was. You have this, it's like we don't have a collective noun for comedians, but I think we should have one. Maybe it should be an entity of comedians.
Something.
Yeah. There's just a lot of comedians dying young. And, you know, just if you were to go back and look at their work, oh my God, what is that? I'm just looking, sorry, I just got Rick Mayall's, Jesus Christ, Rick Mayall's wiki page open. His first post-acting job was in the 1998 Jonathan Creek, which is something that we, I'll come back to in a minute, Christmas special. And then it goes here, in his spoof 2005 autobiography, he claims that he rose from the dead. There's just weird, weird shit goes on with these people. Just wanted to come back. Jonathan Creek was an episode. That was something, again, English kind of drama comedy. Jonathan Creek is played by Alan Davies, who is an out-and-out Mason, and proud of it. He plays this guy who he is the one who creates the magic for his slightly stupid American boss, who's it's what happens. English people make jokes of Americans. He's got his American boss who does all these outlandish magic shows, but Jonathan Creek is the sensible English guy who creates all the magic acts.
Right.
He also solves murders. I've just been actually wondering about that, the whole, because in you have with Jonathan Creek, you had that crossover between like the entertainment, the magician, the wise person, bringing this character all into one. And they use the specific character, this actor, Alan Davies, who's done also stand-up comedy. He's a stand-up comedian. He's just bringing these things together. So he's a prime candidate of both. He's a magician. You know, it's just weird. We don't have enough information, but all this stuff is weird.
It's like they're part of a clique, too, because, I mean, you look at the names of the people who attended his funeral, Don French, Jennifer Saunders.
We're talking about Rick Mayall here.
Peter Richardson, Alan Rickman.
Yep.
You know, and
these are all big, big names in English comedy. Big, big names.
Ade Edmondson.
Yeah. Nigel Planer. Yeah. From the Young Ones.
Alexi Sale.
Yep.
Ben Elton.
Yeah, huge writer. Huge. These are all huge, huge names. Okay, you think, all right, so they're all comedians together. But you just have this feeling of this if you watch English TV or English comedy, you will find that the same actors keep appearing. They're buddy buddies in each other's shows, a bit like they did in America with Adam Sandler would appear in this, and then they would appear in this one, and they're just popping up all over the place, you know, joining forces, or they seem to just how would you describe it? They just sort of spin off into a new comedy show or a new movie here, and there's another one over here, but it's the same comedy magicians. You just see they're appearing again and again and again. Often it's not even very good. I mean, you see the state of comedy these days. It's shocking. There was a line here about Rick Mayall, a quote from Adrian Edmondson, who was one of his co-actors in The Young Ones. Adrian Edmondson was also married to comedian Jennifer Saunders, who acted with Dawn French. It's almost incestuous. Anyway, Adrian Edmondson said about Rick Mayall, "There were times when Rick and I were writing together when we almost died laughing." I just thought, wow. Yeah. And then he goes on to say, "They were some of the most carefree, stupid days I ever had. I feel privileged to have shared them with him, and now he's dead for real, without me. Selfish bastard." So they're bringing in the humour at the end. But, you know, we almost died laughing. I'm not sure what I'm trying to grasp at here, which is why we're having a podcast that is an exploration rather than trying to say something for definite. There's a lot of weirdness, a lot of strange shit around comedians. And it's not a place that you would normally think. I never thought to look there.
No, you would never think that these are the people that you willingly either invite them into your home via TV, pay-per-view, or you go rent a DVD,
mm-hmm.
or heaven forbid, you go download or watch YouTube.
Or you go and watch them in concert.
Yeah, you hand over your money, mm-hmm. and you're actually, you know, you want these people to entertain you. You want them to make you laugh.
You open up to them, yeah.
You open up to them, and it's the last place you would really think to go looking. Because laughter, everybody loves to laugh.
Yeah,
most people, 99% of people like to laugh. And you would never think that, that these people. But, you know, if you just use your intuitive ears and monitor yourself while you're watching it, like we did with Eddie Izzard.
Yeah.
And we did it also with the Dylan Moran.
Yeah.
And it's you just monitor yourself and monitor the what they're delivering, how high the audience gets, and then boom, they come down and they lay on the truth.
Right.
To get them, just like you said before, to accept it, to open up.
Yeah. Actually pay attention to what they're talking about, and you will find, pretty damn sure, you're going to find there's a lot about death, there's a lot about the struggles of life, the suffering, and the normality of these things, that this is completely normal.
Yeah.
It's like almost getting you to accept this is how it is, and we're all in this together, so we may as well laugh about it. Trying to think what else they go into. But if you actually, one thing I thought recently is like, my God, if you listen to stand-up comedians, all they're actually doing through the entire show is complaining.
Yeah.
They're actually complaining. But they do it in such a way that we find it very funny. They do it in a magical kind of way.
Because they know people want, by the time you're done your work week, that's what you want to do. So it's like a tension release.
Yeah.
They're there to relieve your tension.
Yeah, but they're saying that they're one of us. They sell themselves.
Yeah.
I'm one of you. Yeah. I know what this is like. I'm there with you. You know, I'm the same, or I'm even worse than you. And it's not. Their life is completely different to ours in every way.
Yeah.
So that's a lie from the start. I know we like to laugh, but it's like everything that is good for us has been taken over, and there's a middleman to supply it. Instead of us creating our own laughter, no, we need to go to TV or whatever, go to a show for someone else to amuse us.
Yeah. Yeah, this could actually be an addendum to slaying giants.
Yeah.
Not the literal giants of history, but the giants. No, they're giants as well. Comedic giants. They'll refer to themselves when they're talking about each other.
Yeah. We'll talk about them in reverential tones, about how great they are, how funny they are. We can watch it again and again and again. They're so good. They're just amazing. They put the comedy carpet up. Nobody complained. They spent millions of dollars. I mean, they put it up in Blackpool, okay? Blackpool Blackpool is a shithole. My only memory of Blackpool when I was in England years ago was that I just couldn't get out of the fucking place fast enough. I was in a panic mode because it seemed that the promenade went on forever and just, we didn't seem to be able to get out of the place. I just wanted to get out. It's bizarre. I've never felt like that. The only other place I've ever felt like that was Luna Park in Sydney, which is just a horrible, creepy, creepy place. And Matt Deleuze points out that Blackpool, it's basically a shithole.
Yeah.
And yet they spent millions of dollars putting all sorts of really weird crap up in Blackpool, including this comedy carpet. Actually, interestingly enough, I'm pretty damn sure that Dublin, which is across the water sort of from Blackpool, obviously not straight line, I'm pretty sure that the word Dublin equates to Blackpool. It means Blackpool.
Really? Dublin? I was in Ireland?
Yeah, yeah. Can you do a quick search while I... So, yes, we can confirm. It's probably a bit of a glitch there. That Dublin actually translates to Blackpool, and Dublin is across the way from Blackpool. So, some kind of weird energy there, I'm sure, between the two countries. Mm. But, yeah, they put this comedy carpet there that is just laced with all the sayings of all these people. Another thing that Matt pointed out was that what people are walking along the carpet, reading all this stuff, their heads are bowed. You've got a symbolic church with a bowed head.
Yeah.
And I've come across this before in Sydney at the Anzac Memorial. It's done in such a way that you think you're just looking at the statue, but in actual fact you have to bow your head to look at the statue. So you're actually forced into a position of worship, and you don't even know it.
Right, yeah.
You don't even know it.
And you're walking around reading their quotes.
Yeah.
Some people saying them out loud.
Saying them out loud or in your head, yeah.
I think there was another in Matt's article that the guy, they had like some little statue or something, not a statue, but something was...
Oh, so that's it too. So further down the coast, so his article is about the entire coast, part of the coast in England, the Fylde Coast, of which Blackpool is a part. Further down is a place called Morecambe, where they happen to have a statue of Eric Morecambe.
Right.
And on the steps that lead up to him, they've put the words from this song from the Morecambe and Wise show, which is Bring Me Sunshine, which can be translated into Bring Me Light, or Let There Be Light. And as people walk up, it's written on the steps, as they walk up the steps, of course, their head is bowed
right.
as they read the words.
As they're going up to his
yeah.
statue.
So, you know, maybe we're just crazy imagining stuff. I can allow that. We can allow that, you know. Just crazy people.
A little
people.
Too much wine.
Yeah.
You never know.
It's fun. It's interesting. It's more intriguing than watching the news. That's for fucking sure.
And a hell of a lot more interesting than watching any of these television shows.
Yeah. But it's worth playing, you know, one evening of your life, you know, to look from a different angle at comedians and go, well, I wonder if that could be there. Allow yourself, you know, the luxury of 2% doubt that decide for yourself, you know. I highly recommend 2% doubt. What you apply it to, I think actually the best thing is to apply it to everything.
Mm.
Which always going to allow a little bit of space in our minds for more information to come in, and that we don't ever swallow anything wholeheartedly, that we don't create a loop, allow anything to... it's almost like once it's made a loop in us, once we've accepted it, once we've got our answer, it completes a circuit, and that circuit seems to... I don't know, to me it seems like it just holds us down, it stops us, it... stops us from growing or from just, I don't know, moving. Maybe moving is a better word than growing. You know, humans are meant to be, we're meant to be moving. We're meant to be changing and challenging things. We're not meant to stay in the same holding pattern all our lives. We're just not.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast that I am wearing red and blue.
Oh, yes, we do hope you liked our red and blue podcast. Thank you to the people who have made comments, much appreciated.
Yes,
it's really nice when people join in and help expand any kind of exploration. Sometimes it takes guts, and I always appreciate it, and because other people come in and read too, and it gives them a little bit more information to work with, you yeah. know. We need to work together. We need to keep working together.
Yes, and that's ditto for me as well. Because I always enjoy looking at the comments.
Yeah,
and seeing what
yeah.
people come up with.
And I'm just finding that it's a lot easier and faster to do podcasts at the moment than to write articles. Not that I won't be doing that, but it's so much richer to work with someone else.
Yeah,
it just is. There's so many different ideas to get bounced off and. But that's probably even a whole other podcast that can be for a future. So, you want to call it a night?
I think we could.
Yeah.
We could actually get the drum roll and...
Hold on. That's it. That's the drum roll. That's as far as it... That's as good as it gets, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to take our bows.
Okay. All right. So, hope everyone has a great week. And you
yes.
never know. Might even catch you next week.
All righty.
Okay.
Thanks,
see ya.
Bye. Bye-bye.